Monday, August 21st, all eyes will be on the skies. I'm Kay McIntyre, and today on KPR presents the total solar eclipse of 2017. Northeast Kansas is in the path of the total solar eclipse. We'll walk through what to expect on August 21st with Dr. Barbara Anthony-Twarog. She's a professor of astronomy and astrophysics at the University of Kansas. Barbara, always great to see you.
Hi, Kay.
First things first, what is a total solar eclipse? Describe for me the positions of the sun, the moon, and the earth on Monday the 21st.
So the lineup is that the moon is exactly between the earth and the sun, center to center lineup. And that is such a tricky configuration in all three dimensions of space that it doesn't happen all that often. And quite rarely for that to happen and cast a small shadow on a very particular place on the planet. But that's what's going to happen on August 21st. And that path of totality that you mentioned is sweeping over the course of about an hour and a half from the northwest United States to South Carolina. We're really close to the path of totality.
When was the last time that happened here in this part of the country?
I don't know that it has happened in the inhabited period of Northeast Kansas history, a total eclipse so close to Lawrence.
So how does a solar eclipse differ from a lunar eclipse?
In the case of a lunar eclipse, it's kind of the other way around. The moon is getting into the Earth's shadow in that case. So we're blocking sunlight from the moon. But in this case, the moon is just managing to slip in front of the sun, and it's a very tight fit. So the moon's disk is not always exactly big enough to cover the sun, but that's what needs to happen in a total solar eclipse.
So walk us through Monday, August 21st. What can we expect to see starting at, say, 11:30 in the morning?
11:30 or 11:40, if you're able to project an image of the sun or have a safe way to view it, we'll start to see a little crescent-shaped nick form on one side of the sun's disk. And over the course of about the next hour and a half, the part that's blocked or dark will get bigger and bigger and bigger until about 1:07 p.m. that day. We'll only be able to see less than 1% of the sun's bright surface. And that will last very, very briefly, and then it'll all wrap itself out over the next hour and a half.
When you say really briefly, it's about 2 minutes, am I right?
Totality is 2 minutes. We're not actually ever going to have a phase here in Lawrence that is total, so that all 100% of the sun's bright disk is blocked. That means for our purposes that it's never okay to look at the sun. We will need protective glasses or some kind of a projection setup. But it also means that there's not a phase that's kind of easy to describe and talk about how long it lasts. It's going to be a very gradual transition from 0% blocked to 99.3% blocked, and then backed over the next hour and a half to the sun's disk being fully clear again.
How dark is that? If you're, say, here in Lawrence where you're not in mm-hmm. the path of totality, to me, that sounds like 99% of the sun blocked. That sounds
pretty
really dark.
You know, that's one of the things I'm most excited about, because I don't really know how that's going to look. And I thought at first, well, it'll be like evening twilight, but it's not, because at twilight, the sun's light is in the atmosphere and scattering around. And that's not going to be the case here. There's no sunlight getting through to this part of the state of Kansas at that time. Even if it's cloudy, it will be very dark. If it's not cloudy, what I'm hoping to look for is there any point in time when we can see any of the stars or the planets that are in the sky that ordinarily we can't see because the sun's glare is so bright? So that's my personal mission, is to see whether we can see Mars or other planets at the time of the maximum eclipse here in Lawrence. People in the path of totality, if it's clear, they should be able to see some stars and planets in the sky, because 100% is 100%. So it will be very dark there and pretty darn dark here.
The path of totality isn't that far away. How far north do we need to go in order to get to total eclipse?
The locations that people I know are planning for and the ones that have organized large gatherings are St. Joe and Atchison. Benedictine is having a very large event on their campus. But some people are planning to go off-road, I think, to Sabetha and some other locations. I haven't scouted out any since I knew I wasn't going to be leaving town. But probably 50 miles from here is in the path of totality. And if you can figure out a place to go discreetly, safely, and a little bit ahead of time, I'm sure people are going to try to do that.
I'm imagining if the moon is blocking the sun's rays, that it doesn't take that long before the temperature starts mm-hmm. to drop. How noticeable of a temperature drop might we expect to see?
I think that's something that we've encouraged school teachers to think about as a way to participate in the eclipse without merely trying to view it. So I don't really know how many degrees to expect. It might depend on the humidity as well, but it and animal behavior is something also, you know, it's going to be getting darker over a period of a couple hours. I don't know how confusing that's going to be for animals, and I imagine it depends a little bit on their cognitive abilities, but there's apt to be a lot of very, very puzzled insects and birds that day.
It also occurs to me that flowers that open mm-hmm. in the sun may close up and
expect.
Then reopen as
and
they
follow close. Heliotropic flowers like sunflowers will also be a little
confusing.
Be a
very confusing day for a lot of people.
Right.
You anticipated one of my other questions. What if it's a really cloudy day? Will that make a big difference in what the eclipse looks like?
Well, we can't see through clouds, so you won't be able to see what's happening if it's cloudy. The only effect that would be noticeable here in Kansas if we have very overcast skies is that it will get darker. There's nothing that can get around that. But we have a non-zero chance of clouds that day. It's actually been a fairly wet and cloudy summer, so probably about one chance in three that it might be overcast or cloudy that day.
If you've read anything about the solar eclipse, or any solar eclipse for that matter, you know not to look at the sun. It's not safe to look at the sun. Barbara, how can you safely view the eclipse?
We're always really, really glad to talk about that because it is true. And ordinarily, it's never safe to look at the sun, and ordinarily you're not tempted because it's bright and it hurts. But if we're only getting 1 or 2% of sunlight, which will be true for a period of time, your natural defenses might not work so well, and you might be tempted to look, and the damage would occur without you realizing it. So our information from NASA is that even less than 1% of the sun's bright disk is too much for unprotected eyes. So there are a couple of ways. One of them is to get some approved solar eclipse glasses. And I know Kay has a pair here, and she said she can't see anything through them. And we agreed that is the point. They are very, very, very dark. They're not sunglasses. You don't wear them to walk around outside. You would only wear them to look at the sun. And you could do that any day with these glasses, as long as they don't have a puncture in them or something like that.
So I just have to make a side note. So these approved solar eclipse glasses that you were kind enough to bring, they look like the kind of 3D glasses you'd get at a movie theater. They're just cardboard, but the lenses are really,
they
really
seem
black.
Opaque.
Yeah, they
right.
really do.
So they're designed to block out an incredibly high fraction of the sun's light. So you'll be able to watch all over that 3-hour period if you have a pair of eclipse glasses. Another way that you can just project an image of the sun with a couple of pieces of paper and stick a hole in one and project an image on the other. And in fact, nature will do a lot of projected images that day, which can be one of the most beautiful parts of an eclipse. The tiny little holes in tree leaves will project these beautiful crescent images of the sun on the pavement or on the ground. So there's lots of beauty in these phenomena.
I remember that very same thing happening. I'm not sure how long ago it was during an eclipse mm-hmm. that I viewed, and I didn't expect that at all. I was walking outside, and underneath a tree, there were all these mm-hmm. little crescents projected
too.
Onto the pavement, and
absolutely
it was just,
beautiful.
It was striking. It was mm-hmm. so beautiful.
So there's a projection method, which is very simple, very cheap. The glasses, which we will have lots available at the Schenck Sports Complex that day. We've been distributing some around town. We being not just my department, but the College of Liberal Arts and Sciences and the School of Engineering, ponied up to buy enough for the Lawrence Public Schools. Those have been delivered to USD 497, and they're figuring out just exactly how to distribute them. So probably every kid and teacher in Lawrence schools will have access to those glasses that day in their own buildings, because we knew we couldn't handle large, large field trips of people.
I've read that you can, in some circumstances, view an eclipse through a welder's mask.
Mm-hmm. Welder's glass or smoked glass. That's a technique that people have used for a long time. It's not something that I would know how to do well enough or precisely enough. So it's not something we recommend to anybody. And since the glasses are manufactured to a certain standard of protection, we really say just buy the glasses.
Stick to the glasses. Cheap. Stick to the glasses. If you're listening to this and you're not going to be able to come to KU or at a place where they're giving away glasses, you can purchase glasses.
They're available online, and they have been for a long time. I think the museum might have some for sale. The library will have some, the public library in Lawrence. So they secured a grant of 1,000 just as we did, and then we bought a lot more. And KU is going to be buying more, but KU's distribution will probably be on campus the week before and the day of, and the bulk of ours will be the day of at our event. We have, you know, some for walk-ins, but we don't have the means to provide dozens or hundreds for groups, unfortunately, but they're still available for sale.
Now, I will tell you, when I was a little kid, I remember a solar eclipse that took place in Iowa, where I grew up, and our teachers were so adamant mm-hmm. not to look at the sun, don't even glance at the sun, that when we went out onto the playground to look through our little pinhole cameras, I was so terrified that I literally kept my eyes straight downward the entire time, because mm-hmm. I was so convinced that I was just going to, mm-hmm. that I would feel obliged to look at the sun. Mm-hmm. And I still remember, you know, 50 years later, how scary that was as a little kid thinking, I'm going to look at the sun and it's going to burn my retinas.
Well, it would if you did. And I think that the balance for teachers and parents is, you know, how likely is my child to actually listen to me when I tell them, you need to wear these glasses if you're going to look at this, and or use some kind of a projection method. So it's only the period when things are pretty dark that I think that it might be tempting to just say, oh, I don't need these, and I can look at the sun. And that's a period that I would think carefully about, kids that you don't think you can control their behavior quite well enough to make sure they've got those glasses on or they're using a projection method.
And as you said, if you're here in Lawrence or in Manhattan or Topeka, you won't be in totality, so right. You shouldn't regardless. But if you do travel to a place that is experiencing totality, there is a point at which you can... Is it obvious when you're at that point where you can say, okay, the glasses are coming off and I'm going
to... I hope so. I've wondered if they're going to have some big klaxon or something. Okay, it's totality. You've got 2 minutes. Look, you know, I've never been to a total solar eclipse.
You haven't?
I have not.
You're an astronomer that has spent your whole life studying the stars.
There's another one in 7 years. I'm kind of marking that down as a goal. But it seemed like a better idea to stay in town this time. But I don't know what it's like. But I think it's obvious, because not only is it a lot darker, but suddenly features that you ordinarily can't see about the sun, because the bright part just obliterates them, you can see them for a few minutes. Those 2 minutes of totality are probably really, really beautiful. So I kind of envy the people going. I'm not sure I envy them the traffic and the hundreds of thousands of people, crowds, but I think we're going to have a pretty good time here in Lawrence, too.
Well, let's talk about what you'll be doing here in Lawrence. The University of Kansas is planning a wide range of activities for August 21st. Mm-hmm. Tell me what KU's got planned.
KU has arranged for sunglass purchases to be part of Hawk Week and student orientation. So a lot of students will have glasses in their hand that day. I think a lot of faculty are going to, and probably with their chairs and dean's blessings, not in all cases, but in many cases, not have class that day, especially during the middle of the day. The organized activity that we have planned is at the Schenck Sports Complex, which is on 23rd Street, just off Iowa and near a really big parking area. And we kind of arranged something that's a little bit of a cross between a street fair and a science fair. So over the two-hour period that brackets 11:30 to 1:30, which will be the build-up to the maximum and a little bit of the decline, we'll be there. We'll have telescopes. We'll have pinhole camera setups for people. We'll have glasses. We have a lot of glasses that we've saved for that day. And I'm hoping that we'll have a lot of non-science participants too, and we are going to have art projects. Museum of Natural History has been a huge partner in this planning effort, and I can't say enough about how much of this they've made possible. But KU, our department, the Museum of Natural History, and a number of colleagues in the humanities and social sciences are going to come out and talk about history and natural science around eclipses and art. There's going to be little art projects. There'll be food trucks. So
there's always got to be food.
There's always got to be food. It is lunch hour. And if it's clear here, it's August. It's going to be hot.
I hope you're going to have moon pies.
Wow. I'll pass that along. And of course, August 21st is a day in Lawrence history anyway. It's the anniversary of Quantrill's raid on the city. So some of us are paying attention to that coincidence of dates. And wow, that's two very dark days in Lawrence history. That's our tagline. But
it's one thing to be anticipating a solar eclipse like we are right now in the 21st century, knowing what the science is behind it and knowing what is causing it and that we will get through that 2 hours and be fine. Mm-hmm. But I would imagine, say if you lived 1,000 years ago, mm-hmm. and had no idea of what the positioning of the sun and the moon was, then an eclipse would be a terrifying event.
Mm-hmm. I'm sure that it was. And there's always been a core of knowledge about eclipse regularity and the pattern of repetition, but that would have been accessible to a pretty small number of people in the Western world, you know, 1,000 or 2,000 years ago. And one of our humanities colleagues is going to share with us some recollections about late medieval period. This would have been a distinctly bad omen for people and something that, in fact, would have been terrifying. Imagine this is going to happen in the middle of the day for us, which is good in a lot of ways. Can you imagine an eclipse starting and then the sun going down? And talk about terror. You would have until the next day to think about, wow.
Is the sun going to come back up?
Is the sun going to come back up again? And so we find these associations of major, major historical events in history with eclipses that were also recorded. And the extent to which they actually occurred at the same time, I'm not clear about, but I think Muhammad's son died on the day of an eclipse. There are on the eve of Xerxes' invasion of Greece, there was a major eclipse, which is kind of handy because we can backdate the date of the eclipse very precisely, more than Herodotus could describe, I think, in the histories. So we can use eclipse events, if that's when they actually occurred, to precisely date historical events, which is kind of cool.
Wow.
But the extent to which people we're just hoping that they would live through this is probably the bulk of human history.
Well, I'm just thinking about even with comets, that I know that those were considered terrible and great omens. Mm-hmm. And a comet is just, I mean, that's
it,
not
it
nearly as
goes.
Dramatic.
Yeah. It's not as dramatic. We like to feel like we have some control over things, and astrology was always a way of using knowledge about the heavens to control our knowledge about our futures. And if things are not predicted that occur, that's more terrifying than if you knew anything to start with, I think. So I hope we're in a better place than people used to be about these amazing events. I think that's true. Everybody is looking forward to this. We'll be disappointed if they can't see it. So that's certainly a better day in human history than 1,000 or 2,000 years ago.
You'd mentioned that you're especially hoping that non-science students come out and probably adults to participate and to view the eclipse. To what extent are you hoping that an event like this draws people in who might not otherwise think they're interested in mm-hmm. astronomy and continue that interest past August 21st?
You have uncovered our plans,
secret.
Our devious plans.
Nefarious plan.
It doesn't make any sense at all not to roll with what people are excited about and amplify that and help them enjoy it. We're always happy to help people enjoy what's going on. And then go a little deeper, maybe the day after the eclipse, if they've recorded the temperature on the day of the eclipse, what does a normal day look like? What do five normal days look like? And you can teach some scientific method doing that. And if people are pondering how the eclipse is possible, then maybe they'll look at the moon every day that it's up. And it is half the time that it's up in the daytime. And we just don't notice it. We don't see it. Paying more attention to the lunar cycle of phases is an experience that's free and available to everybody. And all that it takes is some instigation and awareness to do that. So we're always hoping that people will tune in a little bit more.
I've heard that there are groups of people that travel from one place to another just to view eclipses. Why the fascination? Why would somebody, you know, at great expense, mm-hmm. go from one place to the other? I can't tell you how many times I've seen an article about mm-hmm. an eclipse and thought, oh, too bad that's in Australia or, you know.
Or in the middle of an ocean.
An ocean.
Right. Which odds are Eclipse Pass will be in the middle of the ocean. You know, not having seen one, I guess I don't know what to say about how remarkable and unique an experience it can be. But it's kind of a bucket list for astronomers that's something that they really, really want to do. And it's hard to not go if it's within 100 miles and you can arrange your schedule and take time off of work and do that. But that also means, in our case, that people with telescopes and telescope competence will be somewhere else that day. So we'll have to kind of shift for ourselves with a modest complement of astronomy-inclined telescope operators that day.
Now, I'm curious, if you're not supposed to be looking at the sun, why would you be watching this through a telescope?
Well, we filter the telescopes too, even denser than the sunglasses. So they're very, very tightly filtered. We have to take off anything that would be exposed to any magnified sunlight. But with a telescope, you can see a lot more detail. You can blow the image of the sun up. We might be able to see flares or prominences on the edge of the sun, which we can do with these telescopes any other day as well. So if you want to see more detail, that's a way that we hope to be able to provide. And people will, of course, want to take pictures of this event. So not just being there, but they'll want a record of it. So there'll probably be a lot of phones held up to eyepieces in the hopes that they'll get some kind of an image. I'm not clear how well that's going to work, but
I assume that you should not try to take a picture of the eclipse using a phone
or a
regular
probably
camera.
A little too bright for your camera, and you can probably overexpose the camera inside.
Barbara, so looking forward to Monday, August 21st.
Now it's just the weather that we have to wait on.
Okay, fingers crossed.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for coming
in
today. Barbara Anthony Twarog teaches astronomy and astrophysics at the University of Kansas. She's one of the people behind the community event, The Eclipse at KU, Monday, August 21st at 23rd and Iowa Streets in Lawrence. I'm Kay McIntyre. You're listening to KPR Presents on Kansas Public Radio. Coming up, we'll find out how the tiny town of Troy, Kansas, is celebrating the 2017 solar eclipse. Troy is in Doniphan County and in the path of totality for the eclipse. Thousands of visitors are expected to descend on Northeast Kansas to view the August 21st eclipse, with major events taking place in Atchison and St. Joseph, Missouri. That's just ahead on KPR Presents. But first, a look at the eclipse of 1878 with acclaimed science journalist David Barron. Barron is the author of American Eclipse, A Nation's Epic Race to Catch the Shadow of the Moon and Win the Glory of the World. Matt Kaplan is the host and producer of Planetary Radio, which comes to us today from PRX, the Public Radio Exchange.
I used to listen to David Barron's great science reporting on National Public Radio. I didn't know during those years that he had an obsession. Like so many others who have witnessed a total solar eclipse, David's heart had been captured by a moon shadow, and he was already planning to tell a story that would bring more readers under the spell. That book is now out, just in time for the Great American Eclipse of 2017, when the path of totality will cross much of the United States. Yet it's about an eclipse of 139 years ago. David recently joined me via Skype while he was in the midst of a book tour. David, it is an honor to welcome you to Planetary Radio to talk about this book, which I absolutely love, American Eclipse, A Nation's Epic Race to Catch the Shadow of the Moon and Win the Glory of the World. Welcome.
Thank you, Matt. I'm thrilled to be here.
It really is just that. I mean, it's not just eclipse chasers like yourself, though I guess you prefer the term umbrophile. Maybe we'll talk about that later. But this Win the Glory of the World, that's kind of key to the book. I mean, how did the rest of the world, especially Western Europe, view the status of American science leading up to this big event in 1878?
That's a great point you bring up. So, you know, when I started looking into the eclipse of 1878 and just decided this is a fascinating kind of adventure tale from the American West and the Gilded Age that I wanted to write about, I just started out thinking about it as a story. But the deeper I got into it, the more I realized it's symbolic of America's early rise as a scientific nation. Because as you say, back in 1878, when America had just turned 100 years old, we were basically an adolescent nation. We were becoming an industrial power, but Europe really looked down on us intellectually. We were not thought to be very deep as a country. Europe was where culture came from. Europe was where good literature and art and music and science came from. But there was a small band of American scientists at that time who were determined to show that this democratic nation on the other side of the Atlantic could do science. And so here in 1878, a total eclipse was crossing the Wild West at a time when total eclipses were very important to science. And this was America's chance to prove itself on the global stage in terms of science.
And I would say they did. I mean, wouldn't you say they were successful?
Looking back at the eclipse of 1878 from our modern standpoint, you really can't say that there were any specific discoveries made during that eclipse that held up over time. But from a societal standpoint, what it meant for America getting its infrastructure of science together and becoming a country that cared about science, that's where I think the real significance of the eclipse of 1878 shows up. When I started writing the book, I wasn't thinking about illustrations, but as I was doing research, I just kept coming across these just beautiful etchings and line drawings and, you know, in some cases, sketches and paintings from that era. You know, this was the late 1800s was a great time for illustrations when there were a lot of illustrated newspapers and magazines. And I started collecting these things. And when I was putting the manuscript together, I started to put them in and I wanted to see what my editor thought and friends who were reading the manuscript. And everyone loved the illustrations. So I just kept putting more and more in. And I specifically, even though this was an era when photography existed, of course, photography was not very good. And I use very few photographs because I actually think that the etchings and the drawings just really bring alive the era much, much more so than the photographs.
I could not agree more, but I will note that you have this series of very fine color plates in the back of the book where those source notes are. Did this book get underway at that shrine to knowledge, the Library of Congress in Washington, or is that just where you spent an awful lot of your time?
Well, all right, to back up just a minute. I had the idea for this book 19 years ago. I've been planning this book since 1998, which is when I saw my first total solar eclipse and just became hooked. That's when I became an eclipse chaser. And as a science writer, and that's what I've done as my profession all my adult life, I decided in 1998 that I wanted to write a book about eclipse chasing. But I knew in 1998 that the time to come out with the book would be the summer of 2017, because this is when people will care. So I put the project on hold for a while, and about 6 years ago, I started to really look around to find a good tale. I think that the best way to educate is through stories. I wanted to find a really good story that would enable me to teach people about what makes eclipses so fascinating and what made them so important to science. So I started to look around, and it didn't take long to discover that really the best eclipse stories come from the 19th century, because that was a time when total eclipses were not just amazing natural spectacles, but they were really important to science. The European nations and the United States during that time would send these expeditions off to various parts of the world to sit in the path of totality, wait for the moon's shadow, and frantically conduct studies in 2 or 3 minutes to try to discover what they could about particularly the sun. I started to look at various eclipses in the 19th century. 1868, that eclipse crossed India and Siam. 1870, that one went across the Mediterranean. And then I came to 1878, and I just really saw how rich it was in terms of characters and setting. And I soon discovered that a lot of the scientists who were in the West for the eclipse of 1878, their papers still exist, and many of them left their papers to the Library of Congress. And when I went there and opened these boxes and found original letters and telegrams and train tickets and diary entries, it just all came alive.
Thomas Edison was an eclipse chaser, at least for this one occurrence.
Right. And so, again, when I get back to what really got me engaged in the eclipse of 1878, a big part of what got me hooked early on was when I learned that Thomas Edison was in the Wild West in 1878 to see a total solar eclipse. And this was a key year for Thomas Edison. He had just come out with the phonograph, and that's what launched him from being a very successful but little-known inventor. In fact, perhaps his best-known invention up to then was something called the electric pen, which was basically a mimeograph device. But suddenly he comes out with the phonograph. He becomes a global celebrity. He heads off to Wyoming to conduct an experiment during the eclipse of 1878. He comes home, and the very next day he begins work on the electric light bulb. So this is a key year for Thomas Edison. And he, of course, was such a fascinating character. I mean, not only a genius but at invention, but he was a genius at public relations and just a really colorful character who was being interviewed by journalists all along his way out to Wyoming and back. And I had such great fun getting to know him.
Yeah, you really paint a great picture of him, and I wondered whether he was a better self-marketer or a better or inventor. It was kind of a toss-up, I think. They went hand in hand. At the other end of the spectrum is my favorite character in the book. That was this astronomer, Mariah Mitchell, who fought against tremendous odds brought about by, well, her fellow Americans to be able to get out and enjoy and do science at this eclipse. Talk a little bit about her, because she's just an amazing character in American history.
Yeah, I just love Mariah Mitchell, too. So Mariah Mitchell was an astronomer, and she was by far the best-known female scientist in America in the 19th century. She first came to prominence in 1847 when she was working professionally as a librarian by day, but was studying the heavens at night while living on the island of Nantucket, Massachusetts. So she discovered a comet in 1847, and for that she received a gold medal from the King of Denmark, and that kind of launched her to fame. By 1878, she was teaching astronomy at Vassar College, at that point, new all-women's college in Poughkeepsie, New York. And as you can imagine, this was a time, I mean, as hard as it is to be a female scientist today, multiply that by 1,000. There were so few opportunities for women to actually work in science. And in fact, you know, there was a real obvious societal bias against women going into science. And Mariah Mitchell would have none of it. And she not only did her own scientific studies, but she saw it as her personal responsibility to pave the way for the next generation of women to come along. And she was out there publicly advocating for women to go into science. And in 1878, when dozens of men were assembling eclipse expeditions out to the West and receiving support, financial support, logistical support from the federal government to put these expeditions together, she was left out. But she would not accept that. And so she, on her own, put together an all-female eclipse expedition out to Colorado, to Denver, which was a scientific expedition, but it was really a lot more than that. It was a kind of political theater. It was an effort to show America what women could do in science and to wake them up. And there was a lot of press coverage of her really quite praising her for what she was doing, and people realizing that women could be smart and educated and healthy and feminine and do science.
A glorious book. I recommend it very highly. Thank you for coming on Planetary Radio to talk with us about it. And best of luck as you continue to travel the country. I hear you're in what, Springfield, you said? Springfield, Missouri?
You've caught me in Springfield, Missouri, which is just outside the path of totality. But, of course, the path does go across Missouri, and I was in St. Louis the other day and near Carbondale, Illinois. Tomorrow I'm going to be in Kansas City. Those are all in the path of totality, and excitement is really building, as well it should be. Folks who live in the path of totality, they have to understand that they have been given a gift to not have to go anywhere and to see the grandest sight in all of nature.
We've been talking with David Barron. And he is the author, the creator of American Eclipse, a nation's epic race to catch the shadow of the moon and win the glory of the world. It is published by Live Right Publishing. That's a division of W.W. Norton. It's available in all the usual places, and we'll put a link up to it on this week's show page that you can get to from planetary.org/radio. Proudly calls himself an umbrophile. I guess you better explain that. Basically, you're an eclipse chaser, but an umbrophile?
That's just a fancy word using Greek and Latin, lover of the shadow. but yes, I do more than anything love to stand in the shadow of the moon.
Support for KPR comes from the Lead Center, welcoming back Black Violin with their own signature blend of classical, hip-hop, rock, R&B, and bluegrass music. September 22nd, 7:30 p.m. Tickets are at lead.ku.edu.
Where will you be on August 21st, 2017? I'll be in the Path of Totality at Southern Illinois University, Carbondale, where a four-day celebration will climax with the Great American Eclipse. From the northwest of the United States to its southeast, millions who may have never looked through a telescope will crowd into that roughly 30-kilometer or 18-mile-wide ribbon to see the sun entirely blotted out by our moon. The monumental significance of this event hasn't been lost on science educators. One of them is Mike Simmons. Mike is president of Astronomers Without Borders, the nonprofit that spreads the love of astronomy and science across our planet. When I saw that AWB had been awarded a grant by Google, I knew I needed to get Mike back on the show. Mike, welcome back to Planetary Radio. It is always a pleasure to talk to you and also to congratulate you in this case on this wonderful new project funded by, of all organizations, Google.
Thanks, Matt. It's always a pleasure to be on your program. So I'm glad to be here. And thanks for the good wishes on that, too. You know, Google is a great partner. This is part of their STEM education effort involving the eclipse, which they're very much into. So they're a natural partner for this. And I'm delighted to be working with them.
They couldn't have picked a better organization. Tell us about Astronomers Without Borders. Remind us of the mission.
Well, the mission really is to connect people through the fascination with astronomy. You know, we're all looking at the same sky. We share the same sky. We're often looking at the same objects. And wherever we are around the planet, we share this fascination and even the same hobby. You can find people looking at the sky through binoculars or telescopes or naked eye. Every place on the planet, it's part of everybody's culture and all the way back through time. So that's what we use. Now, in the end, what we do is to create programs that bring people together to share what they're doing in their countries. It may be the same activity, but they do it in different ways because of cultural differences. And that way we learn about each other and get a little bit more empathy for each other, seeing people as fellow passengers on spaceship Earth, who are really just like us, happen to be on another part of this little piece of rock going around the solar system.
I sure see evidence of that because we hear from Planetary Radio listeners who are fans of the sky, fans of space, everywhere on the planet. You've actually been to a lot of these places. What are some of the more interesting and exotic places you've brought this message of astronomy to?
I have a tendency to go to some of those more interesting places, at least to
me.
A little bit off the beaten path. So my vacations end up being in really kind of more unusual places. One of the places that I've been as much as any other place on Earth is Iran. It's a country I really love. I love the people there. Extremely active astronomy community. And it was really connecting Americans and Iranians who were doing the same thing that led to the founding of Astronomers Without Borders in the first place, because I found it was so different than what we knew about over here. That's really where it worked well. It's just a wonderful place that I love to visit. Lots of history through time and so on.
You're giving a lot of people the opportunity to look through a telescope for the first time. We all love to talk about that first experience we had. Do you see that same thing happening no matter what culture you are visiting, no matter what nation you're in?
It's always the same. I mean, this is really universal. People are here on this little planet, and when we look out and see something else, it's an amazing response. Everybody knows that the moon's out there. Nobody knows that that bright light up there is Jupiter or Saturn. They look through a telescope for the first time and see the rings of Saturn. This is something that has nothing to do with the different cultures or anything else. It's just innate. They are suddenly seen out into the universe for the first time, getting a sense of their place in the universe for the same time. This is a really human experience. There's no difference between us when we have an experience like that.
Also a unifying experience.
It is a very unifying experience. You know, you've probably had this experience as well, that when people come to the telescope, they may be shy about it or not sure, but whatever they are before they look, when they take their eye from the eyepiece, they're different. It changes them. Their response is completely different. So we're all used to authority figures or various others. Everybody turns into the curious kid that they still have inside of them, who they sort of keep under control. That goes away.
So tell us how this new Google project is going to help you do even more.
Well, one of the things that people say about total solar eclipses, it's absolutely true, is it can be a life-changing experience. It's an incredible experience. I've been to 7 total eclipses around the world, including my first trip to Iran, which is how I discovered that great country. It's an inspiration. It raises a lot of questions. What was that? What is going on here? And everybody recognizes it as an inspiration for learning more about STEM fields, science, technology, engineering, and mathematics. This eclipse that's coming up this year in the United States is a historic one because it's going to be seen by more people than any other eclipse in history. People will come from all over the world. There are lots and lots of organizations, from small astronomy clubs to NASA, who have efforts for this to get out the word, tell people to try and get into the path of totality, sharing information and resources to help people experience the eclipse. What we're doing is different. The eclipse is the inspiration for doing STEM education. And I'm not sure that there are other organizations who are carrying it beyond the eclipse. The biggest effort is to make sure people are aware of it and they take advantage of it. But we're actually developing a curriculum that will be used after the eclipse, using sunlight and some other kinds of lights, to study all kinds of STEM fields, not just about astronomy, but biology and geology, energy, weather, climate, all of these things. They all start with the sun.
Yeah, life itself, you said, I think.
Life
biology,
itself, right? Absolutely, yeah.
Astronomerswithoutborders.org, right?
That's right, yeah.
Yeah, and we'll put up that link and other relevant links on the show page that you can find at planetary.org/radio. Mike, this is just one of the projects that I've learned about that is looking to this tremendous event on August 21st, the eclipse, to stimulate interest in science and astronomy and beyond in this country and beyond. Are you glad to see the excitement building toward this event?
Well, it's fantastic. I knew there was going to be a huge push for this, but nobody really knew what to expect. I mean, those of us who are eclipse chasers have been looking forward to this event for 20 years. The effort is really tremendous. The big worry for everybody is that people will not know about it and will miss it, or they won't understand how amazing this is. And I think there's a great effort going on now at awareness, publicity, and education about this eclipse.
Yeah, and at Planetary Society, I'll put in a plug, we are working with the National Park Service to put together a booklet that will be distributed to kids who visit the parks. Now, unfortunately, the path of totality is fairly narrow, and I'm going to guess that you, like the other eclipse chasers that I've talked to, who say exactly the same thing, that it can be a life-changing experience, will tell people, get yourself to totality. But if you can't, it's still something to enjoy?
Yeah, sure. The partial eclipses are really very interesting, and the whole country is going to have a fairly deep partial. I think it's a minimum of about 60%, which is significant. Now, those people who have a deeper eclipse, which is most of the country, will, you know, get some very interesting effects from it. Those who have a very deep eclipse, like 90% or more, and figure that they're getting 90% of the main thing, they really need to hop on the bus and get into totality, because a 90% partial eclipse is 0% of totality. You know, you're really missing the main event, as interesting as it is. One famous eclipse chaser says that almost seeing a total eclipse is like almost winning the lottery.
I think I know who you're talking about. Who is that?
That's Fred Espenek.
Yeah, I've seen that quote. They better make their plans soon, though, because as you know, I'm going to be at Southern Illinois University for a weekend of eclipse celebration there, which I am incredibly excited about, not just because I'll be sharing it with about 10,000 other people in the stadium there, but because this will be my first one, my first total eclipse, and I can't wait to have my life changed.
Well, my first eclipse was in 1979, and I was working at Griffith Observatory and telling people what to expect from the eclipse. After I saw it, I realized I was misinforming them. So what I tell people now is, I can't even tell you what it's like. It's just not one of those things you can describe. It's sort of like describing taste to an alien who's never eaten food. So it's just something that happens to you, and you'll have to see for yourself. You can prepare all you want, but it's going to be different, and each one is different also. So it really is an amazing experience. You have to see for yourself.
Mike, you are a busy guy. Thank you for taking a few minutes to share some of this with us. And once again, congratulations on this new Google-funded project, which is going to allow you to share this love of the night sky and the sun and science much, much more broadly, at least in this country, even though I know you're doing this all over the world.
Thanks very much, man. It's always great to be with you. I love your program. Keep up the good work at Planetary, of course.
We'll sure try. Thank you. Mike, that's Mike Simmons, the president of Astronomers Without Borders. That title pretty much says it all, astronomerswithoutborders.org. Planetary Radio is produced by the Planetary Society in Pasadena, California, and is made possible by its totally awesome members. Daniel Gunn is our associate producer. Josh Doyle composed our theme, which was arranged and performed by Peter Schlosser. I'm Matt Kaplan. Clear skies.
Hope you enjoyed that look at the solar eclipse of 2017 from Planetary Radio. This program came to us today from PRX, the Public Radio Exchange. You're listening to KPR Presents on Kansas Public Radio. I'm Kay McIntyre. Where will you be on Monday, August 21st? Thousands are expected to descend on northeast Kansas, which is in the path of totality for the solar eclipse. There are big celebrations planned in Atchison, Kansas, and St. Joseph, Missouri, but it was the tiny town of Troy, Kansas, that caught the attention of KPR News Director Jay Schaefer. He visited with Adrian Corson of the Doniphan County Economic Development Commission about how they're planning on celebrating.
Sunday, we're planning on having live music, beer garden, food vendors, and, you know, other merchants around. And
is this all around the courthouse square?
Yep.
Okay.
And we're going to have a glow run that night, too.
What is a glow run?
A glow run is when, you know, you invite a lot of people to go do a 5K walk and run, and they all are going to be wearing, you know, glow sticks, holding them, and really sticking out, I guess.
They're going to be glowing in the dark.
Glowing and running.
Let's talk food vendors and stuff. Can I get something to eat in Troy?
Yeah, we have several little restaurants. We have the Feed Store Cafe, which is located right there on the square.
The Feed Store Cafe?
The Feed Store Cafe.
Okay.
And then there's Rookie Sports Bar and Grill. They also have very good food, and it's kind of out on Locust Street, so we're outside of the square, but they're going to have extended hours for the eclipse weekend. We're going to have someone's going to be rolling in their barbecue and doing a lot of smoked ribs and whatnot and be selling that. I know we have people coming. There's a couple food truck type of entities going to be in the area.
Do you have any idea at this point how many people might be coming to the Courthouse Square in Troy for this big solar eclipse?
Well, that's kind of been one of the challenges about this whole thing and getting people on board is no one really knows how much of a crowd this could bring in, but we know the potential is in the thousands. So, for instance, St. Joseph, Missouri is planning a huge event as well, and we get the exact same amount of time of totality as St. Joseph, Missouri does, and they're expecting around 100,000 people.
In the city of St. Joe.
Mm-hmm. So if you look at that, if we just get a small percentage of that, that could mean a couple thousand, which is still huge for our small little rural county.
Because how many people live in Doniphan County?
It's about 7,500.
If you don't want to mess around in the big city, you can come to Troy and see the total solar eclipse for a fairly long period of time, 2 minutes and change.
2 minutes and 38 seconds.
Which is a long period of time for totality.
Yeah, well, at least the maximum for this particular eclipse is going to be 2 minutes and 40 seconds. And so I believe that is in Carbondale, Illinois. So the fact that we're only 2 seconds off from that, and this is really the only area in Kansas of maximum totality, why not come to our area? It's a good opportunity for people to really experience small town Kansas and to, like you said earlier, get away from the crowds. And, you know, they say to view totality, the best place to view it is in big open areas that's unblocked by trees and whatnot. And we have all this beautiful farmland out there. It's really ideal.
Do you personally have any special plans? I'm sure you'll be there with others to take in the solar eclipse. Are you doing anything special that day?
Well, I mean, I'm running the show.
You're running the whole thing.
I've been the one who's gotten this going from the start and so brought in the astronomer from Benedictine College to kind of help teach everyone the area why it was such a big deal, why this is like winning the lottery to be on the center line. And, you know, from the economic side, what a big economic impact it could be. Been teaching people how to register their homes on Airbnb since we don't have any hotels in our county directly, but in the surrounding counties we do. But we're teaching people how to host their homes on Airbnb. So there's a lot of historic homes in Doniphan County. So people are kind of it's kind of cool. These entrepreneurs actually are using this as a test run for their historic homes that they've refurbished to see if they would like running a B&B officially. And we have several high schools that are coming to the area. Like we have one group from Perry Lecompton that are bringing 500 students that day, plus 70 faculty members and inviting their families. So it's going to grow.
You're going to have some people there.
Yeah.
Anything else we should know about this event?
Well, while the main events are taking place in Troy, they're also taking place in other areas in Doniphan County as well, like Highland, where Highland Community College is at. They're hosting some lectures there, and the firefighters are hosting a big hog roast and street dance on Saturday night, so they're kind of teaming up for a fundraiser event to surround the eclipse events. And Highland, the city of Highland's offering a movie night and pizza, and they're expecting to get a lot of people too. So there's going to be watch parties going on all over the county. So we have a website. If you go to dpcountyks.com, you'll see a link to go to the solar eclipse section of our website. Or our official slogan is Eclipse in the Heartland. So if you just Google that, our article should start popping up.
It should be Total Eclipse of the Heartland.
Well, actually, that was our initial phrasing that we were going to do, but then a lot of people didn't get it, or they thought saying of the Heartland made sound like we were about to be blackened out into obliteration. So
you considered it.
Oh, no, that is the original where we went. So it just got changed a little bit.
Yeah, it's still a good name.
With a cute little logo, too. So go online and check it out.
What is the logo?
Created our county logo within the past year. So actually the graphic design department at Highland Community College incorporated that and transformed into the Eclipse in the Heartland logo. So it's nice green open valleys, just saying Eclipse in the Heartland in a very fun method, but you can still associate with our brand.
But go online and check it out.
Yes.
dpcountyks.com. So most of your events and activities in Troy and in Doniphan County are Sunday and then Monday. Is anybody trying to tap into come up Saturday and make a whole weekend out of it?
Well, actually, the majority of people that have called in, at least for the RV parking, are coming up Friday. They are coming up Friday night and then staying till Monday evening or Tuesday morning.
So they are making a weekend out of
it. Yeah, but you see, when we got started with planning these events, people were having trouble understanding that how many people could potentially be in there. So it was like, well, if we have limited resources and whatnot. And, I've been gathering sponsorships from the local businesses and organizations in the area so we even have a way to put this on. And they've been very generous, but it's been a growing enthusiasm. Like, people are starting, as it gets closer, to buying more and more.
And they're starting to get that it's kind of a big deal.
Yeah, yeah. So we're actually ahead of the curve with a lot of the other, Northeast Kansas
communities,
yeah.
So this is your best chance if you're interested in seeing what a total solar eclipse is. This is your best chance in many years, and will be your best chance for many years to come.
Mm-hmm.
August 21st, Monday.
When you talk to astronomers about it, they get very passionate about it and are saying if you are outside of the path of totality at all, it's just not the same. A partial eclipse is totally different than a total eclipse. And they talk about how it's such an emotional experience, apparently, and how afterwards everyone has an adrenaline rush. So I've been trying to convince everyone to make sure we plan after parties as well, because that's something that when this has happened in the past, communities have failed to do.
So basically you're saying it's going to change your life.
I mean, that's what I've been told. Obviously, I'm not speaking for first experience, but would rather, be prepared for it than not.
Adrian Corson, Doniphan County Economic Development. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
Enjoy the eclipse Monday, August 21st. And remember, it's not safe to look directly at the sun. I'm Kay McIntyre. KPR Presents is a production of Kansas Public Radio at the University of Kansas.